It's time to talk about the end of the race. How do we kick? Guess what? It's trainable. We're going to talk about the science and the practice of this. Before we get to how to develop a kick, just a reminder, okay? Fitness matters a lot here. In the 1990s and 2000s, there was at a U.S. track and field coaching, you know, conference where one of the presenters was going on and on about how Americans could not kick. We needed to focus on the kick. Then someone comes up and says, hey, by the time it's time to kick, we're 200 meters behind. We need the fitness first to be in the race. Then we'll go develop the kick. And there's some truth to that. Okay, as we'll get into. All right, so let's look what happens. Last 200, last 100, last final spurt of the race. What's happening here? So a couple of things. We can look at this in basically three different patterns or ways. First is metabolic. Okay, in order to access that burst of speed at the end, we need to not have tapped into all of our anaerobic energy resources. So if we think about aerobic versus anaerobic without getting too complicated is depending on the race distance, what happens is we start the race, we start off, our aerobic engine isn't fully revved up a little as much. So our anaerobic resources actually kind of pitch in and help us that first 100, 200, 300 and say, hey, we'll cover it until we get our aerobic system, you know, revved up. Once our aerobic system is revved up, it covers most of it. Now, the faster we go in the 800 or mile or 3K or 5K, we can't cover all of it, especially in the mile and the shorter distances. So that little gap is covered by our kind of anaerobic stores. But the more our aerobic system covers that gap, both initially and as we're kind of cruising at speed, the more it has left, our anaerobic system has left over at the end. So think of it like a bucket, okay? And we've got to cover whatever the aerobic system can't handle. If we use all of our anaerobic bucket to cover that gap, then when it's time to kick, we have nothing energetically to latch onto and dive deep and fuel that burst of speed. So what does that mean? We need a really good aerobic system. We need it developed well to cover as much of that energetic gap so that we're not dipping into that anaerobic system quite as much to sustain the speed, especially on the faster races or faster distances or shorter ones. Okay? That's from a metabolic. From a neuromuscular standpoint, we can also look at it from muscle fiber recruitment. Okay, what happens is our muscles, to keep the force going into the ground and to keep working, we kind of rotate our muscle fibers in there to do the work. As we get fatigued, some of those muscle fibers kind of go offline. They lose some of the energy that they have. They get filled with acidosis or some byproducts and don't function as well. So our kind of fiber pool is becoming more and more limited. And this often happens where we rotate in some of those harder to recruit fast twitch fibers to handle the job because everything else is kind of tired. Think of it as pulling in more people to, you know, row the ship or boat or whatever you have that you need done. Is you're kind of just calling on people. At first, you call in your steady people who can handle it, but as everyone gets tired, you're just like calling anybody who's around, and they might hold on for a little bit, but then they fatigue really quickly, then we're done for. When it comes to a kick, we need to have some sort of muscle fiber pool that we can call on to get that boost in terms of speed, force production, etc. And then the final thing from a scientific standpoint of the kick is mechanically, what are you doing? It is a change of gears. When researchers looked at the final lap of one of the world championship 5Ks and 10Ks, where Kenisa Bekele won, is they looked at, okay, how did these guys change mechanically? And what they found is that Bekele went the opposite direction. Essentially, if we think of speed as stride length, so how far every stride is, and then stride rate, how fast you're turning over. But he had a pretty long stride length, we'll call it. And then when it came to kick, he kept that stride length, maybe lengthened it a little bit, but turned over like mad. Someone else who kicked well as well did the opposite. they had pretty good turnover during the race, but then when it came time to kick, they increased that stride length by putting more force into the ground. The guy who went backwards and didn't kick, he couldn't change either. His length and his rate stayed the same. Now, this is important because, again, you can reach the same kind of speed doing two different ways. Are we getting quicker, being able to neurally just like hit that turnover button? Or are we putting more force in the ground to cover it? Okay. Each is going to be different. Which way we go kind of depends on what we're used to. If you get to a place with high turnover, then sometimes you can't just keep turning over more. There's nowhere to go. So you better go the opposite direction. Same with stride length. We can't just lengthen out our stride forever. We can't put more force into the ground forever. We need that rate. So what I like to say, as you'll see, is we've got to train the ability to change gears. Okay, setting the stage. Great, there's the science. We get fit enough. How in the world do we train the ability to kick? So first, it starts with increasing the maximum fiber pool that's able to be recruited. So again, think of your muscle fiber pool as all the friends and people you can call in to help you row the boat, pack the house, move, whatever it is. Okay? You got the people you know who you're going to call all the time. But here, you want to have some of those friends who you're like, hey man, when I'm in an emergency, I need to call you and you better get your ass here. Okay? That's what we're talking about when it comes to the muscle fiber pool. We want to be able to, our nervous system, to activate and recruit those muscle fibers. Because if they're never recruited, they just detrain a little bit. And that link from our brain to our muscle to get them to recruit kind of shrinks. That highway, that pathway, that phone number we call kind of goes out of service because it's never used. Okay? How do we increase our fiber recruitment? Pull, simple. Sprint. Hill sprints. Great way to do it. Sprints on the ground. Full recovery. Going fast. Why? We want maximum recruitment, which is determined kind of by like nervous system drive. How much do we need? When we're sprinting, our brain goes like, hey, get all the fast switch fibers going. Get everything recruited. Like, we're putting as much force into the ground as we can. Go for it. The other part of this is strength training or power training that is a high neural demand. Okay, what does that mean? Heavy strength training or power training where you're really pushing that recruitment so there's some weight there and then you're really going for explosive activities. Okay, we're talking big movements that require the legs, things like, you know, squats, cleans, Olympic lifts like that. Okay, we're also can talk about explosive power work where sometimes we're using weighted vests or med balls or things like that, or explosive jumps with weighted vests. Again, some of this we'll talk about it. Yes, the strength training one will come. We're working on it now. We'll talk about it more there, but high neural recruitment. Generally what I like to think of, sprint plus heavy lifting. Okay. Not high reps, low reps. Okay. You do that, you increase the pool. For most distance runners, we'll go the sprints and especially the hill sprint thing. Then once we've got this bigger fiber pool, we want to improve our ability to use those fibers for a prolonged time. So here's what we want to do is instead of just high neural load, we want to do things that recruit a large number of fibers, but put them under some sort of stress. So instead of pure sprints being like 6 to 10 seconds, we lengthen that out. Or maybe we start with sprints and then we lengthen that out to 15-second hill sprints where we're getting some of that fatigue component in there. And yes, that will decrease fiber recruitment to a degree. Won't get as fresh, not as much force into the ground, but that's kind of the point. You're forcing us to train some of this stuff. Other things that work really well are circuits. I love using, you know, hill circuits for this. Canova's hill circuits, Lydiard's bounding and hill circuits work as well. Or doing things like we're going to do some, maybe not quite sprints, but very fast, short hills, and then do some intervals at the top of the hill at maybe 10K pace or 5K pace where we're taking the edge off, but we force the recruitment, and now we're going to train these things aerobically a little bit. So something like, you know, 3 times 10 second hill sprint, couple minute rest, you know, fartlek 4 by 2 minutes at 10K pace, go back to the hill, 3 by 10 second hill sprints, 4 by 2 minutes at 10K pace, where you're kind of going back and forth there. We can also do these, again, old school circuit style, where you're doing some strength training, not as heavy, but something with some explosiveness in there, and then doing some aerobic work afterwards. Alan Webb and his coach, Scott Rasko, were famous for doing this. We called them Russian hills, where essentially what we do is we do some sort of, you know, jumps or explosive skips or med ball tosses, and then go run 200 meters up a hill hard, and then do some sort of explosive jump and med ball tosses, and then like come back down and then do the hill circuit again. That's what it was. Okay. Then what we want to do is learn how to recruit those fibers more so under high acidosis, high fatigue, and then finally change gears off of it. First, to learn how to recruit them. So this is like the specific training. This is fast workouts where you're including some sort of bounding or hills in there to really push that boundary, or using speed endurance. One of my favorite, Barb from Canova, this is a really hard workout. 2 by 500. For 800 meter runners, for example, where the first 200 is at 800 pace or a little bit faster, then you do 100 meters of bounding, and then you do 200 meters trying to kick it in. Let me tell you, after going 200 at 800 pace and then 100 meters of bounding, when you try and kick it in that final 200, your legs feel dead and flat. That's the point. The bounding is to kind of accentuate, to say, hey, we're going to try and put a lot of force into the ground and create some fatigue and make you change gears off of this. If you don't want to include bounding, you can do this hill style, right? You can do something fast on the flat ground, get to the bottom of the hill, run freaking hard up the top of the hill, and then continue it over the top and try and kick over the top of the hill onto the flat ground and keep that going. Why the hill? Because of the strength component, just muscle fiber recruitment creates that fatigue, and you're trying to press it over the top. The last part is the hard part. Now here, what I want to emphasize is these are generally low volume simulations, okay? You saw 2 by 500 for an 800 guy. If we're making that up for a mile, maybe another rep, okay? It's not high volume, because the point is lots of acidosis, lots of fatigue, and kicking off of that, and often having something in there, whether that's bounding or a hill, that kind of exaggerates that, as I said. You could also do this kind of old school style if you don't have a hill or you don't want to risk anything with bounding, because there is a little skill component. You got to know how to bound, and injury risk in there. You can do something like Lydiard's 50-50, where he'd go sprint or near sprint for 50 meters and then float for 50 meters and then sprint again. And you do those in sets of 400, maybe 3 to 4 by 400, where you're sprinting, floating. And what happens is, again, it's not quite the same, but it gives you a similar effect of changing gears. The last part is that biomechanical part, which is changing gears. Great, we prepared physiologically. Now we've got to nail it to how do we do this? Do we increase speed or turnover? Do we increase force into the ground? We got to practice it. You train it up. So here's where I like to do things at first relatively short, where maybe we're doing 400s, where the first 300 is at pace and then the last 100 is kicking it in. Then we lengthen that out. Maybe it's first 250, then 150, and then we bring it together depending on the race distance. For instance, if you're training for a 5K, we might go first 800 at 5K pace and then the last 250, where we're just kind of, you know, so we run a little past 1,000, where we're saying, hey, I'm going to change the gears. I'm going to work on this gear change while a little bit fatigued. We're creating that ability to switch gears. Alan Webb's coach, Scott Rasko, called it hit it. He would yell hit it at a random point in a workout, towards the end of the workout, if we're doing 400s or what have you. And he'd say hit it, And that meant Alan was to gradually excel all the way to the finish. He was trying to ingrain that ability. Now, I love this because Alan didn't know if he was going to get a hit it for, you know, the 10th 400 or the 9th or the 8th or what have you, or if, even if it would come, but or when it would come. But it put this point of emphasis of, okay, we've got to work through the gears to get to the finish line. That's how I look at kick development. You don't need all of it. For some people, you might just get most of your bang for your buck from increasing that fiber pool and then getting some circuits going or some strength training so they can recruit it. At the top level, you might need to do some of these kick development works. For the lower level, you might skip the bounding and the hills coming off the top, and you might say, hey, I'm going to do the sprints and some strength training and explosive training, and then I'm going to work on changing gears. That's perfectly understandable. All of these are just tools. Use them however you see fit. Thanks so much for watching. I hope you like, subscribe, share it with others. The point of these videos is to help educate others. It's to give my lifetime of expertise in coaching runners and athletes and the science behind it and share it with you all. There's a reason that they're just sitting in our spare bedroom of our house, okay? There's no script. I write 3 or 4 bullet points down, and that's what I go with because I want you to see is genuine, earned expertise shared with you from a lifetime of doing this. This isn't me being an influencer and faking it. It's not some AI script. It's not reading off a teleprompter. It is me staring into a computer and talking to you. If you like that, help the channel grow, support my work. Thank you so much.